Well, welcome back to me after quite a few weeks of absence from Cambridge Inside Out. Hi, I'm Robert Winters, and today is May 20th, 2025. Don't mind me if I have a tendency to kind of lose track of the years and the time here, but I've just had a rather significant birthday 5 days ago, which was sort of an amazing thing, actually. I'm Believe it or not, I know I look like I'm only 35, ha ha ha, but I'm twice that right now. Anyway, it was kind of an incredible get together. I mean, I certainly want to get down to talking about what's going on in the civic and political world of Cambridge here right now, but I did want to at least sort of mention that it was a we had a few people by the house, and I will tell you when I first moved to Cambridge in 1978, I actually lived in the first floor of the building, which I still am and own. When I bought the house 7 years later, 7.5 years later, I moved to the second floor, which was where I've been ever since. But currently, there's nobody living in the first floor. So we had a gathering down on the first floor. And I have to tell you, going back down to the first floor is a little like go it always feels like it's very nostalgic. I always feel like I'm going back in time just a little bit. But anyway, so it makes you think about all the things you've done over the many years as a citizen of Cambridge. I was just sort of contemplating it a little bit. When I came here, I was probably more interested in just playing frisbee than anything else, quite honestly. In fact, the very first building I ever set foot in Cambridge was I think it was a kind of an auditorium or a gymnasium for St. Mary's at the corner of Prospect and Harvard Street, where in the middle of February you could play frisbee. So that's what I did. I played frisbee, then we went to Ryle's. Well, the auditorium is there, gym is no longer there, Ryle's is no longer there, but I'm still here. It's also kind of amazing to think that I was one of four roommates back then, and I paid $90 per month. How about, no, excuse me, I overshot it. I paid $70 per month because I had a small room. So it was kind of fun. Anyway, I'll just sort of mention we had a few people over, a lot of friends from the various parts of my world, one of whom was actually the mayor of Cambridge. So, Dinny Simmons came by and read a nice proclamation, out of the mayor's office, which was really quite delightful and unexpected. But it was great. And, so I'm 70 years old now, believe it or not. I kind of hard to believe myself. 47 of those years here in Cambridge. So I may not have been born here, but I feel like an adopted Canterburgian. So anyway, I could say a lot more. There are a few little sort of quick mentions I thought I would make right off the top here. In fact, let me just jump over here to the window for this a little bit here. Just a few quick notes. My birthday, of course. I did want to say a few words. I don't want to obsess about it just yet about the fact that this is a municipal election year. So we maybe talk a little bit about some of the candidates, whatever. Since, as I think everybody knows, I have a particular interest in voting system and ranked choice voting. And I thought it was, even though Cambridge has been carrying on with proportional representation and ranked choice voting since the 1941 election, the Boston City Council just a week ago did pass a I guess home rule legislation. I think it's home rule legislation. With the intention of adopting, should the voters of Boston agree, adopting ranked choice voting for the city of Boston. And there are other places like San Francisco, New York City use ranked choice voting for single member districts. And that's what they would do for district councilors. But for the at-large ones, they're actually talking about adopting for the election of four at-large councilors, a system pretty much the same as Cambridge, proportional representation. Now, I have my own personal feelings about why it came to be. I think, in fact, we have Mayor Wu, and let's not forget that 4 years ago there were I don't know, one time six or seven candidates running for mayor. And there were two prominent black candidates, Kim Janey and Andrea Crawford. Andrea, they'll never forgive me for forgetting the name here, right? But anyway, the excuse me, Andrea Campbell, right? I know her dad. anyway, the fact is that there was an evenly split, vote splitting problem where Kim Janey and Campbell both got about 20% of the vote, and because of the split, they were excluded from the finals, so that it ended up being Michelle Wu and Anissa Asabi George were the two candidates who went to the runoff two against each other. And I don't know that that's set very well with a lot of persons of color within the city of Boston. So it wasn't all that surprising that, in fact, Boston city councilors were warming up to the idea of using ranked choice voting so that there would be no runoff. Basically, everybody go there and you would just do vote transfers in the determination of who would be the mayor. And it's anybody's guess if it had been something like Andrea versus Michelle Wu in a final, whether in fact we would have Michelle Wu or Mayor Campbell. So there's always a little bit of a political incentive for these various reforms. So anyway, I was kind of glad to see it. It's nice to see the cities adopting better voting systems, or at least trying out better voting systems. But again, just like Cambridge City Charter, we have a home rule petition now filed to change the city charter. Not drastically, mind you, but still we'll have to come back to the voters and we'll have to see what people say. I'm sure people of Cambridge will readopt the new charter for the city of Cambridge, largely because it's not all that different than the current planning charter. I could go on about some of the particular changes, but it fundamentally maintains the city manager form of government and proportional representation elections at large elections for both city council and school committee, the same number of people to be elected, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, but if I have time, I'll go into a little bit of depth about this. But anyway, so I thought that was kind of big news. Another item that I don't really want to speak too much about here, but I'll just going to mention it here, just because the Boston Globe picked up on it. We've a former city councilor, Nadeem Mazin. There was a situation. He ended up being arrested, and I found myself in possession of some of the report. And I'm not even going to get into the details of it here, but I just want to, I want to explain to people somehow the dilemma that you're sometimes in here if you're doing something like a Cambridge Civic Journal or any journalistic or quasi-journalistic endeavor. Namely, that sometimes information comes to you. You might be shocked at how many people contact me over the course of a year, with simple things like the passings of significant people, but also, things that may be viewed as sort of scandalous by some. And there's always a decision you have to make about, well, should I just shut up or should I put something out there? And sometimes you just have to decide to put the information out there because it's going to come out anyway, so you might as well. And otherwise people say, well, why didn't you put the word out there? So Nadeem Mazin and I have not always gotten along, but I just want to assure everybody putting information up, which was maybe not the best thing for him, was not done with any enmity at all. It was just that it was available information, and I just thought it would be irresponsible just to sit on and do nothing. So anyway, just to mention that there. One other thing that's happening this year, and I think I did sort of briefly mention it here, was the fact that this is a municipal election year. And it's still, well, actually, I was about to say it's kind of early, but it actually isn't, because we're in May. We're in mid-May right now. At the end of June, beginning of July is when candidates for city council and school committee can start taking out nomination papers and gathering their 50 to 100 signatures in order to be on the ballot. So that's less than a month and a half away right now. So this is not too early to be talking about this matter. And I do follow pretty much on a daily basis, or maybe not every day, if anybody else has filed paperwork with the Office of Campaign and Political Finance, with the intention of being a candidate. Sometimes they don't always follow through. But I'm looking at it and saying, okay, who's coming here? Are there any organizations? Are they trying to assemble slates of candidates? Just to see. And listen, 2 years ago I was a candidate myself. I might still be a candidate again. We'll see. But it's kind of pays to kind of know the landscape here a little bit. So I'm just going to do a very just a quick shot at it. I don't want to go on too much about it here. But I as for the last 2 decades. I've been maintaining Cambridge candidate pages even while I was a candidate, which I know some people didn't like, but tough. So of the candidates, what I basically have here, all the people who ran last time, I have not included Paul Toner. I don't know if Paul will decide to be a candidate or not, but there was a strong possibility he was not going to be, so I haven't put him back onto this one yet. But I included all the people who ran pretty much last year. And I'm just going to say them quick. So Aya Al-Zoubi, who did pretty well last time, actually has been contributing money into her campaign, thousands of dollars. So it's obvious she will be a candidate. Burhan Azim has been actively fundraising. So unless he decides to take a job elsewhere and bail out, he probably will be a candidate again. There's a new candidate, Elizabeth Bisio, who I have met now, who lives down, in the emerging part of East Cambridge, has filed paperwork with the Office of Campaign Political Finance and is raising money. So she'll be a candidate. I don't know if Doug Brown is going to be a candidate again. The only reason I include Dana Bollister is that she did refile her paperwork with the Office of Campaign Political Finance, which usually means there's something going on, but it could just be a clerical matter. So I don't really know. Don't know whether John Hanratty is going to do it again. I do know he's kind of talking to other candidates. So if he's not a candidate himself, though I think he might be, he'll certainly be. He's definitely trying to encourage other people to be candidates. Peter Hsu actually has done mailings already. So he's actually began that earlier this year. I actually was kind of surprised. It turned out that I actually met him a good many years ago. I only recently made the connection that he used to work be a, I think, reporter for the Harvard Crimson back when he was at Harvard. So, but I just when I met him a couple of years ago during a political campaign, I said, "Oh, glad to meet you, sir." But turns out he didn't know her. I don't know about Adrienne Cline. I just have her picture here still because she ran in 2023. Don't know if Evan Mackay is going to be a candidate or not. I'm only happy because there was rumors going around that he might. Very little doubt that Mark McGovern will seek re-election. I don't know about Joe McGurk. He ran twice. Doesn't seem to necessarily have an avenue in, but so he might decide not to do it anymore. Fellow named Ned Mallinson, who I've never actually spoken with, but I've heard him because he's like the big cheese with the A Better Cambridge group. So, it wouldn't be the first time somebody's using an organization to sort of promote their personal politics. He's been showing up at public meetings, making statements. So he's obviously trying to get noticed. But the fact that he's affiliated with ABC, of course, causes me to wonder whether there's one of their incumbents might choose not to seek re-election, because you sort of need to have a way in, unless you're trying to bump somebody off. So I don't know whether his presence as a candidate suggests somebody may not be a candidate, an incumbent may not be a candidate, but that's a possibility. Patty Nolan seems certainly to be running again. France Pierre seems to run for both city council and school committee. Have no idea whether he's going to do it again, but I still see his stickers stuck up on lampposts around the city. It was a fellow named Stanislav Rifkin, who I'd never heard of before, lives up on Channing Street. He's been showing up at public meetings, speaking and raising a petition from a group that I believe it calls itself Cambridge Housing Affordability Organizers or something like that, largely Harvard students. He may actually work as in an administrative position up at Harvard, but definitely coming from the left end of the spectrum, sort of the DSA end of the political spectrum. Another person who pulled papers, not pulled papers, but filed Office of Campaign Political Finance paperwork is a fellow named, and I hope I'll just say Zion Sharon. I don't really know anything about him. I did find a photo, but it wasn't the kind I was going to use. So I don't know anything about him, but he has filed the paperwork with the state. So look for him as a person to pull papers come beginning of July. Sumbul Siddiqui, unless she takes a job elsewhere, presumably will be running again for election. Don't know if the current mayor, Denise Simmons, will be running again. I think she should be. I think she will be, but and I hope she will be because she's one of my all-time favorites. And we need people like her. Say that straight away. Jeeva and Sabrina Wheeler, actively fundraising, certainly be a candidate. The problematic Dan Totten could very well be, unless he chooses to do something else. But honestly, I don't know what else he could do. I don't know about Vernon Walker. He ran 2 years ago. Maybe, and I haven't heard from him since, so maybe he's vanished. Hao Wang contributed a fair amount of money into a campaign last time. Didn't really score too many votes, may think twice about being a candidate again. Aisha Wilson, pretty clearly actively fundraising, will seek re-election, I'm sure. And there's me, who's still thinking about it, but I'm probably leaning toward it, doing it on my own terms. And then Kathy Zusi, now an incumbent, who replaced Joan Pickett on the city council, and presumably she'll be running again as well. I have no idea what the story is with school committee. I'm just going to presume that all the incumbents are going to run again, as well as Andrew King, who came very close last time. I'm just going to assume he's going to be a candidate again. And I'll just going to leave this page from here right now and just say this, that I don't really know what the incentive for people running for school committee is these days, or whether it's something people really are eager to be on. We don't, there seems to be less interest in that. Once upon a time, running for school committee was kind of a stepping stone toward other options. People like Mark McGovern, Denise Simmons, Patty Nolan, and I could go back many, many years and mention a lot of people. Alice Wolfe, for example, who first ran for Cambridge School Committee, built up a political base, political organization, a lot of supporters, and then eventually made the jump, which is not such an easy jump. Oh yeah, Aisha Wilson. Let's not forget Aisha Wilson, the most recent to come over the other side. But other than that, unless you got kids in the school and you're actually absolutely dedicated to public education, and I'm going to presume everybody who's on the current school committee fits that description. It's not. I don't know. It's a different sort of incentive system from years ago. So. Anyway, I don't want to say too much more than just that. All right. I will say this is that, I want to talk a little bit about city boards and commissions shortly, but the there are currently three city boards that are seeking members. I think city management has been doing a pretty good job of, in the recruitment, advertising, and processing of applicants for city boards and commissions. The three that are currently looking, one is sort of almost a historical artifact. It's the Commercial Parking Control Commission. I may have the name a little bit wrong, but it's kind of a vestige of the days when we had the interim parking freeze, when there was a parking bank, and in order to build a commercial building, if you wanted to have parking, you couldn't even build your building unless you either secure the parking, and you couldn't get the parking unless the city allowed it because it was a freeze on new parking spaces, so much so that they actually started regulating regular on-street spaces under the deal that for every two they could regulate, they could put one in the bank. So that's why it was a couple of years when DeLauren Preston was in charge of traffic and parking when there was this enormous proliferation of parking meters and resident-only spaces. We used to have a fair number of unregulated spaces, and they almost all disappeared, unless you happen to know secretly where a few of them are located. So it's commercial parking. There's the Council on Aging. I should know about that one because I'm quickly joining their ranks. And then the Committee on Public Planting, and I know people who serve on that, you know, and they're, you know, sort of, you know, that's a kind of a niche committee to be sure, but it's an important one. They're all important, really. Maybe just to jump ahead a little bit, at last night's City Council meeting, because I wanted to just recap a few things over the last couple of months. You know, there was a City Council order asking the city manager to look into possible restructuring, shifting around of specifically the P Cambridge Peace Commission, which actually started out as the Commission on Nuclear Armament and, you know, nuclear. Oh, goodness, I should know this cold, but I forgot. Nuclear disarmament and peace education. But if you actually look at the description of the Peace Commission on the city website, there's absolutely no connection between the statement and the ordinance that created it and what it functionally does today, which is kind of an interesting thing about. So when we create city boards and commissions, do they ever go out of existence, or do they get redefined? How does a commission morph from one thing into another thing? How does a commission or board that was created for a purpose get uncreated if that purpose is no longer so necessary? I was pointing out to somebody the other day that on the books, technically, there was an oil recycling committee formed, which quietly just vanished. I was served 22 years on the Recycling Advisory Committee, but they used to be created by a separate ordinance, something called the Committee for Environmentally Desirable Practices. But it became a practical reality that the two committees just started meeting jointly. And now nobody really says Committee for Environmentally Desirable Practices anymore. They just say Cambridge Recycling Committee. But, you know, I would certainly make the case, not that I'm trying to hasten the end of anything here, that, you know, we don't have a advisory committee on rubbish or regular sanitation. We had an advisory committee for recycling because it was new. But it's not new anymore. I mean, I was around when we were getting recycling going. I mean, I played a role in that. That was in 1989. Curbside recycling started 1991. So, you know, and again, I'm not trying to hasten the end of it, but, you know, at some point, if something's been in existence and operating for over 30 years, maybe it's off the ground by now. And maybe, you know, it should just be viewed as a function of a city department. Or maybe we should have a general, a more broad view about, you know, the Committee on Solid Waste for the whole city or something, and not just specifically about recycling, you know, what have you. So I don't know. Anyway, what I suggested as an alternative, you know, in the matter of boards and commissions, is that rather than, as the City Council order last night was calling for, was specifically targeting the Peace Commission, because there's a little bit of personal upheaval going on there right now, that in the Police Review Advisory Board, I think that maybe somebody even floated the name of some other committee as well. You know, this really shouldn't be one-offs. What this should be is, I was suggesting that maybe every, let's just make it up a number here, and let's say every 10 years on schedule, there should be, or there should be a review of all the various discretionary. Now, there's a difference if it's a regulatory board like the planning board or the Board of Zoning Appeals or something like that. But, you know, where we basically take a look and say, okay, do we still need this committee? Or should its function be redefined? Should the ordinance be modified a little bit? Even 30 years ago, back when I was crazy enough to be a candidate in 1993, I think I wrote a little bit about how all these discretionary committees should have sunset clauses, so that, you know, after a certain number of years, unless they reauthorize because there is a continuing need and or a redefined need, that they should essentially, you know, sail off into the sunset, so that the talents of the people of the city can be utilized for issues and programs that are more relevant in the moment, you know. You know, the notion about having a committee that was put into place, you know, on nuclear disarmament and peace education, for example, you know, I mean, we used to have a, there used to be a commission called the Civic Unity Commission as part of the city government, and that kind of just went away. And we were having upheaval in the city a couple of years ago. Well, that is more like 5 years ago now. Not just COVID, it was the George Floyd incident. There was a police-involved shooting. So sure, I guess you could say the Police Review Advisory Board would be an appropriate board to play a role in having a community conversation about such things. Should the Peace Commission or the Commission for Nuclear Disarmament and Peace Education, would have that, should that have been the appropriate way in which that would be handled? We do have a Civic Unity Committee of the City Council. We have a Civic Unity, there's a sort of a semi-official board on civic unity. I don't know, maybe that would have been the appropriate way. I mean, we could use a little civic unity in this day right now of, wackadoodle stuff coming down from Washington, coupled with the sort of single issue advocacy, which seems to define civics and civic and political life in Cambridge these days, not for the better, in my opinion. Anyway, I just say there's a need for better ways to do things. And I just think that every few years, there ought to be an evaluation process where we say, are we doing stuff well? Could we be doing things better? Not only from the political point of view and the elected city officials, but also, as well as city administration, but also in terms of citizen boards and commissions. We have a finite pool of active citizens, and how do you squeeze the most benefit out of that population, I think is a totally valid question. All right, enough about that. So let me just do a sort of a quick run through. I will take a break here a little bit, but let me just start here because we haven't had done the show in here a couple of months. Way back in March, there was a little bit of a controversy because there was a mid-year proposal, appropriation request from the police department for a little more than $500,000 for replacing firearms. It was eventually approved. The only reason I'm mentioning it here is that it became kind of a firestorm because there were various interest groups who were not happy because, well, maybe some people who just want to abolish the police anyway, fools. Or, but also there was a number of people who were MIT students who had been arrested by Cambridge police during some of those encampments related to the Gaza situation last year. So it was like payback time. So they were showing up giving testimony about why the police should not get any more funds, and then they were rather artificially saying, oh, we should be diverting all that money toward social programs. Hey, we fund a lot of social programs too. But you also need to have the firearms working and operation and available. So anyway, I thought it was kind of an interesting flashpoint. And the Democratic Socialists of America crowd, the DSA crowd, they were, using the, as they always do, they're just to do political organizing. So their fingerprints were all over everything then. One thing that's came up in a while back, and it's continuing to come up and noteworthy is, we've during the COVID time, there were ARPA funds that funded various discretionary programs that didn't have strings attached like regular taxpayer-funded stuff did. One of which was this thing called Rise Up Cambridge, which was essentially a local welfare program where you basically give money, no strings attached, to individuals who are, I guess fortunate enough to be chosen to be participants in the program. But that's federal money that's running, going to run out. It was set to run out. And the question was, is it even legal to continue that program? And apparently it wasn't. But there are ways that you could, with appropriate qualification, have a successor to it. Now, the problem is that, this is extremely expensive proposition when you're just handing out $5 or $500 a month or whatever it is a month just to thousands of individuals. And we are in a bit of a budget crunch, something we haven't had to go through for a while. So now there's an ongoing question about whether this should be funded, whether the program should be extended, and if so, could you take the money from one place to put it to another? But I think this is really kind of a delicate political situation, but that kind of came up, and it's certainly continuing. I'm going to just pause here for my end of program, and then I'll start in another couple seconds. Okay, so see you soon.